Today is December 26th, 2017, the last of 2017. My name is Deborah Schwartz. I'm sitting here on behalf of the Mill Valley Historical Society and the Mill Valley Public Library, and I'm sitting with a longtime Mill Valley resident, mom from the schools that I know since our children have grown up together, and the founder and the owner of the Throckmorton Theater. I'm with Lucy Mercer today. Lucy, thank you so much for talking with me today. I know it's a really busy season, and so that you made time for our oral history collection is so much appreciated.
You're so welcome.
Lucy, I'm sitting in your office today, surrounded by, I don't know what, a chaos of color, and it looks like there's a little bit of everything that's ever gone on in this theater. Is that an accurate description?
Probably so. I pull it into my office and layer it in and things like that, and occasionally then I have to pull it all out and create order again.
Yeah, well, there's an odd sort of order to it all, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the arts. First of all, before we get going on about the theater, because I know you, I've talked with you many times, and mm-hmm. I know you have quite an interesting, you've done your own research about the Throckmorton the theater and the building itself. Mm-hmm. I would love to get a little information about your family and what brought you to Mill Valley and when.
I moved, I think, at first to Sausalito. How old was I? Maybe early 20s. And from there I moved into Mill Valley and to have a family, actually. We were thinking about having a family, and I met my husband during the time that I was in Sausalito, and then we moved into Mill Valley together.
And so Danny, I know, from when our kids were in school together. Then this would have been in what year, approximately, that you moved from Sausalito to Mill Valley?
Early 80s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be about early 80s, because we were married in 82.
Mm-hmm. So you've been here for a good long while.
Yeah, for a long time.
And how about what brought you to the Bay Area? Did you grow up here?
I grew up in the Bay Area and in some parts of Nevada, too.
Uh-huh.
But I was born in Santa Rosa, California, and my father was a contractor, so we moved to many of the Bay Area cities where he would build a house or work on a project, and then we would move to another city. So I've lived in Belmont, Fremont, Oakland, Castro Valley, but never Marin County. I moved to Marin County. When I was left home, I moved to Marin County.
So when you left home, what, after high school?
Yes, yeah. I traveled to Europe and then I left. And then I came back from Europe and I ended up in Mill Valley. I mean, in Sausalito, from the East Bay.
What brought you? I mean, had you visited Sausalito and Mill Valley and Marin County?
No, a friend of mine had, her parents lived out in Fairfax. And I loved the ruralness of it. I loved the outdoors. I was very drawn to that. It felt like a lot of hippies here, I think, sort of that kind of atmosphere. People were very creative. Homes were creative, even. And I was drawn to it.
Before we move away from your family of origin, would you please give me the name of your parents and any siblings that you may have?
My parents, you mean?
Your birth parents, your father and your mother.
Mm-hmm. Jean Dorothy Ann Rasmussen was her maiden name. Charles David Mercer was my father. And Christine is my older sister, Tina. And then there's me. And then there is David, my brother. Trish, my second sister. And Bob, my youngest brother.
That's a big family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe you needed some space when you moved over to Marin County.
enjoyed it.
So have you always had a flair for the artistic, for the, you know, for the arts and for performance? Is that something that you, have you been a performer in your life? I mean, you own this theater?
No, I would never call myself a performer, and I really haven't performed. I mean, I haven't even done, I've done nothing, and I'm not drawn to the stage for that reason at all. But I view the arts more as a way of connecting to other people. So through the arts, you can do performance. There's backstage work. There's ensemble. There's all of the cultural activities that you engage in bring various different people together. So it's really the coming together activity that arises out of the arts is what I'm interested in.
I've stood next to your husband at various sports events, and I've heard him sing the national anthem.
Yes.
He has a lovely singing voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do my kids. And my husband loves performance. He loves being on stage.
So he's an actor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's an actor in his heart. That's not what he does for a living, but yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're living in Mill Valley. You have your children. I remember when you built remodeled your house
mm-hmm.
next to Park School.
Mm-hmm. That was a whole project.
That was, and mm-hmm. I often thought, wow, they're going to be hearing the sound of children playing across the potato plants on the fence. You're in the hub of a very active part of Mill Valley, yet
mm-hmm.
still in this quiet neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a wonderful, it was a wonderful house because it was a whole adventure. The woman that I purchased the house from had grown up there, and it was a historic house. And when she left, they had closed down the house and left it as is, she and her husband. And they would come back and protect it at times, and it was very, very overgrown and hidden. And it was, and as I got to know her, Lottie, who owned the house, her husband had died. It was chock full of her memories, and her possessions were still. Every room you walked in, it was like walking into it from the 1920s or something. And I would walk through because for us to do anything to the house, to be able to do floors or do make it more habitable, because it wasn't real habitable at that point in time, we needed to get some of these possessions out and in her possession. And walking through, though, she had all the memories. So she had these stories, fabulous stories of what happened, because everything triggered a memory for her. So I spent 6 months walking through that house and listening to the memories and things like that. It was just phenomenal. It was wonderful to hear of her family that had been involved with the start of the UN and were world travelers and very interesting, literate family. That was just, I loved that.
Do you remember her last name, Lottie?
Lottie Sporlater.
Sporlater.
Mm-hmm.
So, always perhaps, or have you always been someone who's interested in knowing more than just the surface?
Well, for that, yes, because, you know, you can say from a practical point of view, you have to get started on the house because you are paying a mortgage on the house and things, and for me it was much more the experience, the stories, the where that led, and ultimately, yes, the richness that it gave to the house and the underpinnings of the house and the value of the house and where it sat and the land it sat on were all the built-up stories, who had built it and why they were there and what happened within the house. And she had small films of different things too. And some of the beginning, she had film of some of our landmarks around here that were at the very beginning. I find all of that fascinating because it is our roots and we build upon that. So,
mm-hmm. Really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you now you finally remodel the house, and mm-hmm. this is in the 90s, correct?
Yes, that would be true, because let's see.
Our sons were, mm-hmm. Zach. Yeah, we both have true. Sons,
yeah,
Zach, and
yeah.
they were both in Park School.
Yeah.
And this is so...
And they started Park School because we moved into that house. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So this is 96-ish, 97, 98,
yeah.
right around there, right?
Yeah, it would have been a little bit earlier, maybe, because Gabrielle was born in 92, which would put, and she was about 3. Yeah, well, that'd be about right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a good time to mention your children,
mm-hmm.
Their names.
Oh, Gabrielle is my youngest, and Remy and Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Sika and Christelle and Ryan, who joined us at other various different times, too.
So those being... You're showing me a photograph. Oh, my gosh, I hadn't realized you picked up so many.
That's our whole, yeah.
That is a love... I'd love to include this in your
oh, sure.
history. This is a really big family filled with beautiful smiles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my, this is lovely. Congratulations on a lovely
yeah,
family.
That
house
wonderful.
At least can take them. It's a big one. So you finished the house. That had to be a project.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, Sequence, correct me if I'm wrong, you went from working on the house, which was quite a project,
mm-hmm.
and then not too long after...
It was nearly concurrent from what I can recall. It was like 98, 99, both of those time periods. So I acquired the theater, too. But prior to that, I had acquired some other real estate. I purchased some apartment buildings up in Santa Rosa that were low income and organized to get rid of drug dealers and things like that, because there was a very strong community, but like one building was at the end of and it was a cul-de-sac it was on, and all the drug deals would be in the parking lot. So I organized around getting rid of the drug deals, went to the museum up there and asked for some computers for the kids to use in the laundry room, which was a larger laundry room, so some of the younger Hispanic families, the kids could go in and start to do schoolwork and things like that. And again, I was interested in the community. I was interested in what you could do in a community and with the changes that you could bring in. Not that I, you know, because I sort of backed into doing real estate to some degree, but I found that it was impactful. It's impactful because real estate is where you live, you know, where you create homes, where you create community. And when I found this building, it was very deferred. It was out of the public's eye, too, out of the public eye, because it had been purchased by the Oddfellows in the late 50s, and they did a lot of their own ceremonies and social gatherings and things here. But over time, the Oddfellows didn't have a good method for bringing in younger members. So as they aged up, they found that they had real estate that they weren't doing as many ceremonies and things, and they were beginning at that time, I think, to invest more in retirement homes and things. So this had been was very deferred, had been dormant pretty much for some years. They were renting it out at a very, very low amount to a few gatherings, but the rug inside and everything was it had animals, and it was just very deferred. But it was large public space. It was gathering space, and it was built. The back the theater was built just at the cusp between vaudeville and live cinema.
Which is what year is that about?
1912, I think, is when they dug out the back here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's different time periods that they say approximately then.
Uh-huh.
So the thrust on the stage was deeper than if you were building for a cinema. So some of the buildings around in the county also that were built for cinema have a very narrow, really nothing as a stage.
Mm-hmm.
This had a scooch larger because it was built for vaudeville and had an old place where there had been an organ in here too, which I think was given to the church up the street. But it was dormant. It was not being used. It was a big hall, and the Odd Fellows had over time put up a, they did a restaurant or something like that, I think, for themselves upstairs in the mezzanine, but they just had old sliding glass doors, and there was not a desired use for it as a public gathering space any longer that people understood, because it was so deferred. If people were ever came into it, there was a couple of meetings that were held here, but they thought it was so bad. And when you first came into the front door, they had created storage lockers with all these goods, because they had rummage sales over many, many years, and whatever didn't sell went into these storage lockers and things. So the front entry was narrowed down into this tiny little hallway path that you would dump into this big room, and you had no sense of it. And I just thought at that point in time, it's the only real community, larger community gathering space downtown. I can't remember when the drugstore was going out of business that was on the corner.
Lockwoods?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or going out, or changing, and then there was the hardware store and things
mm-hmm.
too. And things were changing. The dynamic of downtown was changing. But, you know, that's the heart of a community, too, to have activity, to have a gathering place, to have a place that people can come to and then retreat back to their homes. And so I thought, well, maybe I could revitalize it as that, as a theater, and have various different activities and things like that that would draw people together, and that would encourage people to come down to their heart and then return back and to recognize themselves as a community, recognize their neighbors and things. And so that was my initial impetus for purchasing or trying to purchase the building. There were some other people that wanted to do other things with it, but
at the time, remind me the shops that were out front. There was a knitting shop, I recall.
There wasn't when I purchased. There was what had been the barber shop
mm-hmm.
on this side, and it
on the west side.
Is that the west?
Is that the
good.
West? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the crescendo now.
The crescendo.
And Monica, I can't remember her last name, had a hair salon in there
mm-hmm.
when I purchased. And then there was Ikeka, Rebecca, who moved to Hawaii later on, who did Hawaiian flower shows and I believe some Hawaiian music occasionally. And she had her business, which was wholesale and things too, I believe,
mm-hmm.
on the lower floor there, and then she had part of the upper floor.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a tailor that had been up in the upper floors here, and then the knitting store. I think it was in the upper, or maybe upper and lower too. I'm not sure about the knitting.
Maybe, yeah, I think
yeah.
both maybe they may have, but I remember
yeah.
taking knitting classes.
Yeah.
And I remember coming here in the 70s and actually having a movie theater here.
Yes. There was, well, Saturday Night Movies, which was Mark Fishkin, when he started that, I think they did once down the street a little bit further, but then, yes, they came in here, which was, again, large space, set up a portable screen, and did some of the beginning Saturday Night Movies here. So that's why it was technically started here and then grew.
We spoke a couple of years ago, and you were telling me about the research that you did, you know, investigating it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that process, what compelled you and what you discovered,
well, again,
or why you needed to do it, or the whole thing.
Well, again, it's roots. You know, you end up someplace, and you grow from, the more that you understand the place and what took place, you know, we're all sort of like the seeds that grow on top of each other. You take nourishment from what you understand of where you are. And so I'm always curious about what happened. Why? How was this building built in the here? Or how did it come to be? What was its history and background and the people that had their own dreams and aspirations and things and passed through the doors in the middle of the night? And so I'm always wondering about that, because I think more understanding not only helps us understand just human condition, but helps us understand our own stories. And those all come together in some ways when you look at the history. You look at, was it the first building built upon the land? What was underneath the land? And for us around here, of course, we have these beautiful springs and that have been covered in many cases. We have the wildness that was here that we've concreted over to a certain degree. When we've added our planning and our streets and our, you know, and we add them to get the fastest way from one place to another, rather than, and so all the curves and the grace that went before is what I find interesting. I find interesting to, it allows us to see more than, or to see more of what is possible and to see our own connections. So this building had been it was the first built on the lot. And the front build, it's actually two buildings, and the back was dug out by horse and buggy prior to there being the streets and things like that that were formed. And people accessed and came down into town from the mountainside. It's similar to, you know, we had pathways, we had steps and things that were built to get from one place to another, because this has a lot of mountains or a lot of hills and things like that in this area. So people would come down from their homes and gather together to watch the latest Charlie Chaplin or the vaudeville too. There was some very funny mentions about the vaudeville that was taking place in here. And it was the definition of our town to come together and to retreat back and things too. So,
Charlie Chaplin, tell me about he performed here, correct?
Yeah, he performed here. When I was going through the history books, those microfiche that everything was on, there was announcing his performances a few different times, and apparently he worked out of Newark, I think it was, or something. There was a cinema company that he worked with. That was and there was a lot of different actors and actresses, and I'm not sure what how they set up and things, because a lot of it was done outdoors. So the shooting was done outdoors and things.
Mm-hmm.
These big, huge cameras, and yeah, so it was the newest and latest, and the movies themselves, I think, were very, very short, really. But it was the idea, it was the, you know, the magic of what they brought to you, the drama. Some of it took place, and I remember there's very tiny short reels. Here, there's a projection room, which is a tinned-in room then, because it was very flammable. And the projectionist always had a toilet right outside, because you couldn't really leave for very long. And we found some of the old little strips of film and things like that up in there. That was really wonderful.
Hmm. Do you ever wish you could travel back in time in the theater and see it as it was at another time?
I think we sort of do, to a certain degree. I mean, it feels like it anyway, because you can see all the different shades. It's like you do. You hear it and you feel it in the bones. Any building has its own spirit, sort of, mm-hmm. you know, and you touch it and you help and you heal parts of it, and you the wood that's decaying or the You know, there's certain things like water is very insidious and can cause great damage and things like that. And then you sort of try and heal and bring the building back to its own sense. And often with the older buildings, they were built with really beautiful wood. So that wood stands, you know, stands through so much and has so much to give. And anyway, I love all the old bones.
You love the old bones. That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
So you buy the building.
I bought the building. And my father's a civil engineer, and I would always follow him around. And so I know something about structure. I'm certainly not a civil engineer. And I would invite him often because he's would say tell me everything that was wrong, all the structural pieces that you would need to do and address and things like that. And it was really wonderful. But this building really exceeded even some of the, you know, the deferment and things like that. The love that it needed was significant. And I just found that I would take one board at a time. You know, you start two and eventually you're beyond the 50% mark. You know, you eventually get there. Even though it doesn't look like it in the beginning, you go, oh my God, I can't do this. And so I just started it one board at a time and kept at it.
How long did it take for you to bring this building back to its best self that you could
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's still a process.
So how long
it's
after
always...
you purchased did you open it, the building?
Well, the very first shows that I backed into, I think were in 2002 that we did a few, that we started. Because part of it is testing it. Part of it is going, you know, does it work? Especially in a community space. In the beginning, I would sit on the sides of the room and I didn't feel a relationship to the stage because there was a funny... it was more like a box, a rectangular box, and that was what I listened to in the beginning. I actually had somebody come in too that does sound in Europe in various different venues, but what he does is he sits and he listens, and he comes back and he listens, and he listens to the sound in all kinds of various different parts of the room. It's not because the way apparently you can do sound is you can computerize, you know, you go, okay, great, with this distance and that and everything, it's going to, you should do this over here and do that over there. And I loved what he did because he was he was very slow, thoughtful, sat and listened. And there is something about you actually being in a space and listening, I think, that has makes a difference. And that was, and you can observe, you could have done the theater in the same way, and the subtle difference of not feeling as engaged to the stage that I was feeling, most people would find it so subtle that they wouldn't necessarily respond to that. But that I think is what happens to us kinesthetically, is those subtle things that are off. You don't know exactly why when you leave it. You know, it was great, but there's that little other thing that could have made you feel included. You know, and what does that mean? How do you take that? How do you make that inclusion? How do you look at a backstage, which is sort of like a ship, because everything happens in a constrained space, in the dark, nearly. So you're trying to create a space that works to the optimum, that everything has its place, and you know, and because it's all orchestrated back there with a lot of people. And
do you remember the gentleman's name? the sound?
No, I would have to go back because I keep, look at me, keep everything.
I'm not going
to
ask you.
No,
no worries.
I can see him in my head.
You can see him?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see him feeling your...
Yeah, yeah. Where did we find him? It was like these people that we found that was just... they felt things. They could tell you. I mean, he'd done these ancient places over in Europe and things. And he said, no, you just sit and you listen. And to me, that was just the beauty of listening and checking in, to me, was just wonderful.
Well, interesting you should use that as a way for me to imagine. You mm-hmm. sort of seem like a special visionary to me. I mean, you definitely have it appears, listening to you, that you have a way of being in the world that involves more than just observation. You seem to really feel
mm-hmm.
the world around you. And it's interesting if you have not, I mean, had you ever at any time in your life had any experience whatsoever on what it meant to stage, to help create, co-create, and to embrace performances?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here you are.
I don't know if it's... I mean, because it wasn't that I thought so much of performances. I thought of activity that would challenge us or help us to frame a question that would encourage us to frame a question, would be also something that you could enter into and imagine yourself in or maybe it's open up your imagination to yourself so that for a moment you could exit who you were and be whatever in a situation with other people and open yourself up to ways of thinking. I thought about the kids. When the kids go to school, we're going to school, and as our schools have increased the sizes of their classes, and there's so many kids, part of what has happened, and now there's all these tests and everything too, part of what happens is we're no longer looking at learning through the inspiration of learning. It really is managing kids in a classroom, and you stay in your seat, and here's the lesson, and the teacher is constrained by what they need to turn in and reports and things like that. And so any question asking, any deviation from your subject and getting to the end goal of achieving the most of the kids passing, you don't have the luxury or the time for that. And so what happens is we don't want that the kids get don't develop questions, and they don't develop a facility for asking a question and staying with it too. Well, why is that happened? Well, what is this? Or even dreaming of it from another point of view. And there is a need for a respect for those questions too. Not just, well, we, don't, this is the answer because that's what the whole thing is pointed towards. So I thought of it in terms of that, of being able to come in a space where you could ask questions, where you could dream something different, where you could change the possibility of what you believe the answer is supposed to be, but maybe you could look at it from a different point of view. And that is really where performance or arts or whatever, because people approach it different ways. It could be a visual, it could be just some visual that opens your mind for a moment. It could be a word. It could be a performance that pulls you in and has you crying or laughing or whatever, and you, because all of those things become more contained in our world, more this is an acceptable time to do this, this is what you should see or you shouldn't see, or this is what success even is. And so the connections that and stories, what one of the very valuable things that any of this is stories that people share. And we don't have the same ability to hear each other's stories. And you can hear them just and be the observer and think about it and how it affects or doesn't affect you and things too. But we don't have those passed down stories in the same way that helps us to understand ourselves as human beings and see, and value ourselves too, or any aspect that we contribute, because our value scales are different quite often. And I think that people try, and I don't know that people try, but I know that the media and things like that wants us to dumb down our feelings. So you can see that with movies. I still remember going to, I can't remember the name of the movie, but I went to this movie and with my kids, and the people in the front of the car were laughing and doing something, and then they turned around and they shot the head off of the person behind them. And I was so overwhelmed by that laughing, and then they were laughing still or something, and it was like, and I was so appalled. And I know one of the kids said, "Mom, you know, it's just a movie." And but I can't imagine, two things. I can't imagine not feeling. If I turned off those feelings and said, "Oh yeah, it's just a movie," and remove myself from them. But the feelings are what it is so rich, and that's what you know, to fall in love without yes, there's the pain, but if you don't embrace it all, then you don't have that fabulous feeling too. So to dumb it all back down so that I'm not going to get hurt, or I'm not going to feel anything, or I'm not going to, just is so... it distances us. And that would be what performance does, is it puts it in front of you, and it's fragile, and it's you feel the pain, you feel the emotion, you can see that if you can open yourself up to that. And in a safe, I don't want to say a safe space really, but a space of that allows you to do that, that you walk in and you're allowed to do it in some kind of a way, to open up to those things, that builds us as a community. It builds us as an understanding of who we are. And so I say it's through the arts, which I think everybody's really an artist in some way or another. They may not identify, because a lot of times people say, "I can't draw," you know, and so it's a stick figure. But I think it's because they have a comparison of what an artist is, and that is a title that they can't apply to themselves. In reality, we really art is so many different forms that it's how we approach things. And you can be visual, you can be you can use words, you can in any case, there's just so many different forms. And they are the connectors. They connect you to yourself, they connect you to each other, and they connect you to the earth. In any case, so I'm right
there. But. Well, that, you know, what I hear you talking about, you have this, I think you have a sight inside, I mean, if I can be so bold as to say this, where you see this safe place. I mean, you can, people can watch movies now, and you have to guard yourself against the atrocious. But you've got a third place here. It's not a civic building, and it's not church, but it's still a protected space for possibility.
Right.
Which, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how you view an essential aspect of any community, having that protected freedom of expression and experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, because there's a lot, what people do is they, I guess what I would say is that they can experience that not just in this place, but you can start to build an understanding, because it's like a third voice that says that there isn't, a voice that you can always put to it. You can feel it. Mm-hmm. And so but the more that you experience it, and the more that you understand that you're part of it too, and that you can create it, and that there is a way of being in this world that includes that. And so part of that is the magic. Part of it is that people walk in and they feel a magic, or they feel a connection, or they feel something, but they don't feel that it's emanating from them too. So they come and have an experience, and they could build upon that. But that magic does exist. Sometimes I liken it to cleaning your doorstep. You may feel that you're cleaning your front stoop or something, and it makes you feel good, and you just do it, and you tidy it up, and it represents you. And somebody else could look at it and say, or walk by and say, why do you take so much time doing that? You know, it's going to get dirty again, and tomorrow you're going to have to do the same thing or whatever. And they don't necessarily see the value on a practical sense. But the more that they walk by, they will start to feel what that feels like. Just because of the time and attention, not because, you know, of cleanliness or anything else. It's the time and attention and the care that you put into that spot. And so gradually that does wear off in people. That does tell people, oh, well, you know, that's interesting. And it starts to engage people too, and starts to draw you in. Why? And you can't say it's because, you know, I clean every day, because it really is a deeper thing. It's really a caring. It's caring an investment in something that, yes, it will change. Theater, when you do theater too, you're constantly taking something, you're putting it all together, and then you're taking it back apart. So you build sets, and you and costumes, and in this case we have hats and beautiful things, and then you take it back apart. And people say, well, if you're an artist and you take it back apart, you know, what's the value of that then? Because maybe there's a picture or something, but what's the value? But you see, the value is in the process of the creating it too. And that's an enormous, that process is as enormous a value. You also take it apart, and then this piece that was the little corner of the house that you are building becomes part of the sidewalk or something, and another theater piece later on, because you're always reimagining those pieces in another piece. You turn it upside down, and now it looks different, and now it becomes another aspect of what you might be doing. You know, that to me is very similar to our land and to the hills and things too, because if you step on a piece of grass and it withers and dies, it still is accepted back into the ground and becomes, you know, part of many other pieces of grass and come back. So there's some, you know, there's a constant rejuvenation of where we live, and an appreciation for that. And that's sort of what the whole process is. The whole process engages people, and they call it, you know, refer to it more as the ensemble. But you value everybody at the table in an ensemble. You are building things, you are creating, you have across the board. It's not just the performer on stage, which sometimes people tend to go, oh, it's the performer. No, it is the process. No, nothing works without the other parties involved. you know, when this mural, when Zio did the mural on the
Zio
side of the
Ziglar
building.
Zio Ziglar mural on the side of the building.
Yeah,
yes,
when he first, I had a different one. I had him paint one on the side of the building, and downtown, they thought it should have landed under the what colors you can paint buildings. So we went back and forth about artistic freedom and things like that. And
this is what year was this? Do you remember?
No, I can't remember now.
It's been there for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know, but at that point in time, they said, the city said that they were going to fine me and things like that for having it, as we were going back and forth, and they said that there were some people that didn't like it. I don't know who these people were, but so at one point in time, I said, well, I never intended to have, I never intended to have it as static in any case, because a static would be a decoration nearly in my mind. I'd love to do other ones and change it out and things like that. And so in the midst of that, I asked Zio to do another one. I said, well, somebody didn't like this, so we took it off the side of the building and he did this other one that is on there right now. And now I have found over some period of time, people are very attached to it.
Yeah.
They go, oh, that's what it is. And in the back of my mind, I still go, well, we need to change it out because it is it's the re-looking, the re-visiting it, the seeing something new, because that is where you are creating. You're constantly looking and re-looking and things, and you are understanding things from a very different perspective when you do that. You might always be looking at something from one point of view, and when you turn it on its head, you see it from another point of view, and it reminds you of something very different. Like a book, if you read it when you were 10, and then you revisit the book when you're 45, or whatever, you have a very different perspective on the book, and you may get something totally different, or understand it from a very different level. So it's the process and the engagement, and it's the journey along the way that creates the sense of who we are as human beings. And all of this it's our life journey. You know, there's ups and downs. You do things and you may wish, or if you approach them today, you would perhaps approach them very differently. Although I do think to some degree, look at yourself and understand that you do your best approach at any given point in time, and you may have other opportunities to approach, to do something again later on. And you may approach it very differently, but that doesn't negate how you approached it at the, you know, one point in time.
So in this ensemble approach that you, how you see the performance, mm-hmm. and the community, you have collaborated with many people,
mm-hmm.
to do many different things. I mean, you have, I'd love to hear, not just now, but in a little bit, the many kinds of programs you offer here, and you collaborate with the community. But you've also, with performers and locals,
mm-hmm.
you've created a place here where some people are professional performers who now have their own backyard theater,
mm-hmm.
which they can practice things,
mm-hmm.
with and perform in. And it's, I mean, many people that may be used to very large venues find this intimate theater setting to be something special.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you'd like to talk about some of the people have been part of your ensemble,
uh-huh.
with this theater. Because it's always nice to talk about other community members.
Mm-hmm. I see the theater as a little bit along the lines of, in Italy, you'll find a theater on every street corner. And they can be beautiful, ornate, you know, or not as much, but it's a place of engagement, a place of various different activities and things like that. So, and stage is a natural component of those. So we have many, I mean, I think this area has been fertile with creativity for a long time, trying something new, a different approach or whatever. And yes, we have many creative people that live in the area that are very talented. And so we've had a lot of talent. What I found, because we're a relatively small house, I mean, I think we can, if we pushed maximum, depending on our about 260, 280 seated here. But even when you get, even when you're very talented and you command very large houses and things, if you are creative, quite often you don't have the ability to create because you're underwritten with what you've already produced. So produce that again, produce that again. You, it sells tickets, go into these houses, and they will, and your success is dictated. But it's also constrained by it because you, if you are creative, you want to try things. You want to try something different or a different approach. Or musically, you might be inclined to do a crossover that isn't what you're known for or something. But I think that's, again, because I feel that we're framed around the reach, the creative aspiration, the why not. And so I try to build an understanding in the audience of what that means, that the audience is part of the entire the creative process, that they can that they understand more about the creative process and they appreciate it, that they're not just the critics coming in for a show at the end and looking at it from the critic's point of view. And it gives them more ability to create a relationship with the performer and more understanding of what the performer is going through.
When they understand that they're part of the creative process, not just in their attendance, but in their response and their willingness to
yes,
hear something new.
Exactly, to hear something new, to follow and to understand that it doesn't, it's not just the end product on stage, that there's been all of those builds, all of those attempts, all of those tries that get up to the point where something may be delivered nationally then too. And that process is very invigorating, very exciting, because you are creating, you know, it's a creation all anew. One of the things early on that I always said was I wanted the performers then too to be audience members. The audience members of course become performers too, because there's an appreciation, there's a build always of learning and things in all of the different creative fields. But there's a respect then that you get. You're not just a performer, but you're actually sitting in the audience and supporting the work of others that are maybe coming up. Maybe you're incredibly talented, but they're feeling the huge respect of having you in the audience. But vice versa, that you understand it holistically then, 100% of what it takes. Because being a performer, it takes an audience. Being an audience, it takes a performer. So you know, everything is necessary. Again, everybody has a necessary spot at the table.
But my question for you then is, with performers, is this dynamic come forth organically, or have you encouraged it? When you have performers here, have you had a conversation with them and say, you know, will you please do try your new things, or will you come sit in the audience? Is this something that you nurture specifically?
Yeah, because I wasn't, my background wasn't in theater.
What is your background in?
I don't know.
Did you go to college?
I have a BA, but it was a right away college or whatever.
Okay.
Antioch was the.
So you're self-driven with your own particular vision. You've got the space, and you're inviting the performers and the audience alike to come into your world.
Yeah, because that's the creation. That's where the richness happens. Mm-hmm. That's where the conversation happens. And what I've always set for myself is every performer gets paid something out of a point of respect that they perceive themselves as a performer, that they hold themselves, that they hold a respect for themselves as that too, and that comes in so many different ways. You know, sometimes the up and coming performers, they have a friend or so and so, they'll film them for free, and then they'll have this film and stuff, and I say, yeah, but do you have the rights to it then? Do they own it? Do you own it? And there's all this nebulousness about that because they're so eager to get something. But, there's a little bit of there's a way in which you can respect, you start to respect yourself when you have a certain way that you are respected too. So in a silly little way, we have a green room downstairs, which is where all the performers are. And the performers will come out and mix with the audience, and depending on their comfort levels and stuff. And I know many of our audience members. But when the green room door is closed, I say, no, you don't just go in there. Yes, you say you know them or whatever and things like that. But that's their space to be, where they can get ready and they get to be, protected in that way. And when they're protected in that way, that they feel a certain thing. Oh, I'm a performer back here. The audience, oh, okay, great. I'm respecting them, that even though it would be very simple for them to do that.
Well, it's one door.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
and
the membrane is one door.
Yeah. And then when the performer chooses, he can come out to the audience. It's a way of holding respect amongst everybody in a small space. But I think people appreciate each other then too, that there is an appreciation that's engendered when you have small formalities like that.
And well, you've got a small space, so there.
Mm-hmm.
The green room is not a big green room. I've been in it myself.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of like something large, though very small.
Yeah.
It's pristine in its own way.
Right.
And how about the times when a performer, Robin Williams, who performed here so many times,
mm-hmm.
tries something new and tanks?
Oh, well, that's wonderful because he was able to do that.
Yeah.
So, and he could live through that being on stage. He could say, oh, well, that didn't work, or that's, he would bring notes and things at times. But he was human first here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was him being able to try something and to feel that he was, that he wasn't in front of an audience where he had to succeed because he was getting paid the bucks to be, on stage, and that's what
he was paid to take a chance.
Yeah.
He actually knew he was going in, that he was being paid to be reckless. Well, of course, that guy was reckless anyway, at times ready for anything. But isn't that an awesome idea that somebody is paid with respect to the performance and then encouraged to just go for it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for Robin, I think there's an investment when you get to be big enough, I think, in who you are. So people invest in who you are. You are spontaneous, or you're this, or you're that. You're going to deliver this or that. But there's also a pressure with that, too, because now you have this definition, and it's not that. No, being serious or being anything else that doesn't fit into that mold is not something that they're selling. And so you end up with managers and their kids,
their
kids who are going to college and everything, you know, so you end up, needing to perform and needing to deliver for a lot of different reasons, so. You need to, I think, and he was just, he was a wonderful, wonderful, incredible guy. And he was a guy, you know, he was that was trying things out and funny and was one of the most generous guys, emotionally just generous to a fault for himself. He never turned down any request or anything from people that would always want to come up, no matter how he was feeling and stuff. He was just a wonderful.
I've heard some of my interviewees talk about this theater before. You know, Marty Ballin says this is
Marty,
one of his favorite places.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of heart in your theater. I get the feeling from the performers.
Well, it's just you know, it's funny because you can go, you look at a lot of performers, and they come, because again, I didn't know the industry, but they come with these tech writers and things, and they have this whole list of things. And really, a bunch of those came about because they were not getting... They'd arrive places and they wouldn't have things set up, or somebody wouldn't think about, well, they've just traveled here and they need to get on stage pretty quickly, but they haven't eaten or whatever. So, and it was because they were focused on the performance. And we don't have all the things that these tech writers can, but we do, I think, treat people like, I mean, I think I consider us a home for them. That this, we're welcoming them in. We want them and things. And so, have they eaten? Are they? So it really just becomes people to people. How are you treating each other? And so that, I think, hopefully we succeed in that all the time.
How about your programs that you're running here? I know once we spoke and you told me about how important it was for you to have programs that bring the youth back to this community.
I think it's programs that help us as a community see who our full community really is. So and who represents our full community, because certainly the youth, although for a long time the youth were not really downtown because there wasn't anything that was much downtown, but it would be our youth, it would be our seniors, it would be the full diversity that we don't see, although we are marketed back to ourselves as being white, middle class, wealthy, that is what we hear in the marketed world. That's not my experience. Through theater, you have a broad range of people that come in. You have you see far more about who really lives in our community and is attending various different things, because we have such a broad array of programs. So I really feel strongly about being accessible and being, because I don't think that there's creativity and things like that. There's no special way that you can buy it or something like that. There is, you know, and it is richer for understanding it from all the various different points of view. So we offer many programs that are a complement, free programs to encourage participation by all members. We work hard at making certain that people can attend, can get here and attend and things too.
Give me an example of one such program.
Well, we have an arts access program, which provides access to everybody that we reach out to other nonprofit organizations and offer tickets, but we don't just offer tickets, we give them tickets and we work with them to make certain that they can get to the theater too, that they can get to us or that we can, and we look at ways to reach out, because we don't feel that just bringing people here to this theater is always the best way to engage initially and to educate. You know, we have classes and things like that, so some of our classes we do outside of here, specifically to get into those communities. We just we chose one of our plays this year is In the Heights, which was Lin-Manuel's first one that he did. And part of the thinking behind that was, if we are going to do that, we want to really make certain that we're reaching into our Latino communities and seeing if we can get people that want to audition and things like that very specifically into that. And we did end up with about 90 auditioners, and it will be a primarily Latino cast of young people. And that's just important, because that's who we are too. Of course, you know, we look now, if on an audition basis, we were really wanting to reach in the Latino community, but of course, you know, we're auditioning for talent at the same time, and we got some phenomenal talent in there, you know, so we're very excited about that. We're going to go into rehearsals.
Who's we? When you say we, give me some names of the...
Oh, well, I have Amy Marie Haven is the young director of theater and youth programs, and Reba Gilbert is educational manager now. There's a lot of crossover in the programs that we do, so if we're doing a theater piece... Well, in this case, we're bringing in choreographers, or we're bringing in music directors and things. So it's a collaboration from around the Bay Area right now of different people, picking people. And in this case, In the Heights is Puerto Rican community. So it's not just the Latino community. We're already talking about how do we educate or open up the understanding of the immigration experience, the understanding of the Puerto Rican community as a smaller community within the Latino community, and who can we have come in, talk to the cast, who is our choreographer, we've got a fabulous choreographer from the East Bay, who and what are we true to that? Because what you should be able to do is to walk out from an experience of that, these kids and the ones that are going to be involved, to understand more deeply themselves and understand more deeply the Puerto Rican community. We're talking about doing food, having some, you know, food meals together and things too, which inculcate a little bit more. What's the real experience? Because food is a very deep, big experience. The smells and everything. Of course, the ties to Puerto Rico now, who has great need and everything, and a community in great need currently. And that we take everything. So, and that's what sometimes is the layers. You take a vehicle like that, so we can do In the Heights, we could do it incredibly well, the performance and things, but it's a vehicle also. It's a vehicle for conversation, it's a vehicle for better understanding, it's a vehicle to reach out to other communities, it's a vehicle to broaden understanding of Puerto Rico for our entire community. Who knows anything about it, other than some of the more obvious things, and why is it important? Why is it valuable? Who are the people? Do we have community members? So again, it's using the vehicle to give back to in as many layered experiences as we can, so thus walking away with that richness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be wonderful to go and do one of the shows in Puerto Rico, but that probably won't be on the spectrum just because of the cost of it. But that kind of thing is you know, resonates, if they're learning a song, if we had any connection there, and we could combine kids from there learning the same song or something, you tie people together in ways that are not I'm helping you. It's human ways.
Mm-hmm. You're a nonprofit here?
Yes.
The theater's a
mm-hmm.
nonprofit?
Yeah.
So do you write grants, those kinds of things? I mean, how is that for you being a nonprofit?
We are so tiny, we haven't written grants yet. I tend to do things only if I understand them. And grant writing takes time and attention, and right now I'm, you know, spread with what I'm doing. I think we would fit along the lines of many grants, and I'm hoping to be able to bring on board somebody who understands much more about that and be able to write, because it seems like they would be a natural for many of the things that we do.
So you're self-sustaining nonprofit?
No, we seek support.
So
yeah.
Fundraising events
mm-hmm.
and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed there's some events that you host here that there is no charge whatsoever.
Yeah, because they are for...
Donations, I guess, only.
Yeah, people could donate. It's, you know, we should have more of a sponsorship. We don't have a development director currently. You know, we've been growing. But we're at the point where we need somebody that understands some of that, because that's not my background, not my natural background.
So you're here in the center of our community, here in town, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're the very core of downtown Mill Valley. And you're reaching out in your way. You're not only a place where people can come to,
mm-hmm.
you're at the same time reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And you have definitely a significant presence here. How can Mill Valley help you? I mean, maybe the town would like to reach in other ways. Is this an opportunity for you
to speak to? Yeah, I'm big picture or detail. And I am not, my background, I take things on and try and solve a problem and move in those directions. And so I'm not an asker. And I don't think that there would be a dearth of desire or anything if there were a good ask or a good, you know, a way of doing that. I think we've grown to the point where that's the next step, to get that more, to organize that more. So we're right on the cusp of that. I don't know what exactly that means, but maybe it will get more organized, because I think people want to be connected too. I think people want to be involved in various different ways, but you need to be able to offer them something and to honor their involvement then too.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
I think there would be, the absence of this theater would be sorely felt. I mean, it would.
It's so hard for me though to see, you know, because I'm always just doing the next. It's
uh-huh.
not like I go, oh, this is. I always see the next or I'm, you know, trying to do put together a show, and quite often I'm thinking about the individuals in the show. Then, oh, so and so, and they just, their mother just died, or this, you know, there's that detail of who all these people are. And it doesn't mean that they're well-known or anything else. It just means that they're people, and you get to know those people and their quirks and needs and things like that. So,
yeah. Do you ever have the vision of looking forward 5 years and imagining how you see this theater or your experience with the theater going forward, or are you more in the moment? And
I mean, I because I tend to see it as the music and the sounds and the vibrancy, because it's always slightly changing. And, you know, it's at times too, I go, oh God, I have to do this, or I have to, you know, there's something needs to be fixed or something like that.
This is a lot of energy on your part.
Yeah.
This theater.
Yeah. Well, and I like the music and the sounds and the connection, you know, when it's a very vital. I love those intersections. I think, I think of getting older and without somebody creating that music. I think of musicians as just this wonderful thing that you always want to have as part of your family, because they bring in something and that's so additive. It's so rich and so wonderful, just being able to play an instrument, a voice.
You've got the songwriters circle
mm-hmm.
going here.
Yeah, there are songwriters. And... Yeah, there's a lot of.
Has there ever been a moment in your experience with this theater just that stands out, that's particularly punctuated, that you had a sense at that moment that this is exactly how I saw it and here it is kind of moment, or any moment that you've been in your theater and maybe a performance or something was happening and.
Well, you know, I'm like the fly on the wall. I love, and I prefer that position, but you can see that you see those moments happen on stage. You see those moments as people are coming in the door, you know, that they have had, people come here too in all kinds of ways. You know, they could have had just a death in their family, or they could have had a marriage in their family, or they could have had, they come, you know, with wherever they are in that moment, and they come all together, and so every audience is new. Every audience and the performance as it is that evening is always new. There'll never be anything like that again. So it's always this mix, and you can feel what the audience is feeling, and you can feel what they're feeling on stage and backstage and what's working. And there's the performers hanging out in the green room then talking about what's working or not working, or meeting each other because for the first time they've never met each other before, or the crossovers backstage, because of course we have this tiny little green room,
mm-hmm.
and so you have the musicians coming in and you have the comedians exiting, and you know, they find that they're related or something. So it's all of that, and for me it's also the sound of the music coming through the floorboards, and somebody, the chorus is in one room and the orchestra is in the other, and it's all the stories, and it's all the stories that add up to the vitality of it. And it's not something that you could put your finger on, but when you're in it, it's very, very exciting.
You describe it so perfectly and vividly.
Yeah.
I mean, I can feel it as you're describing the experience of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not exactly a fly on the wall because you kind of built the wall, but you...
Well, but I do find that I'm sort of, I just soak it in.
Yes, you see.
You know, I'm the observer sort of soaking it in. I can feel when something's not quite right, and I can, you know, I'm the one that's going to change the chair 2 inches on this because it's a little bit better or whatever. So it's always that sense of, and also because I can touch the chair, because that touch, I think, lends itself to something too, touching and connecting. Anyway.
This is such a tactile, sensual, evocative experience to be in a space like this that you've created, which is really amazing for you to have listened to you talk about how it is to have this vision somehow, but then, and all the around the vision, you know, with all your sensory apparatus, whether it's within your head or experiencing the external world, and then to somehow articulate that into an actual space that exists with all that comes with, you know, the taxes and the purchasing and the plumbers and the people and the, this whole cacophony of everything, to actually have to segue from the vision and the experience to the actual appearance and then the action is something. You've done a very good job.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, But I will say that Steve Coleman, when I met him in the very beginning, when he poked his head in, when I was going, oh my God, how do I not make a mistake? How do I get this to work back here and things? He pulls out of me, or he confirms that it's okay to follow, you know, that there's some way in which he just confirms that you don't have to, that it's all not just a business or a whatever, that it's okay to dream, you know, and that dream, without that dream, it wouldn't. So he's just wonderful at that. He's, yeah.
Well, this is part A of this theater interview because I'll be interviewing Steve soon.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And I think just, that could be a very, hopefully,
yeah,
a complimentary. And Mort Saul, hopefully soon, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Another collaborator.
Yeah, and I see. I see. I mean, it's all people. It all becomes just people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it, you know, on the base level, that's, and we're all looking for those connections.
Mm-hmm.
And so you expand those connections and the value that you receive from them if you're open and, you know, if you see that and you are allowed to dream. And dreaming is the biggest thing that we put away, but that really is. We dream into being what we want to be.
Lucy, this has been a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for providing us this place for people in our community, because at the heart of it seems that everything you talk about is community and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that in this day and age where people are separated by technology, we have the comfort of our homes where we don't have to go out as much as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
Just as important, and perhaps even more important than ever, is to have a place like this in
mm-hmm.
a community, the heart of a community,
mm-hmm.
where people can be together and dream and experience and share and collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you very much for your contribution to all of us and to our town and to everywhere beyond, as far as you can dream to reach.
Great.
And let us know if the Historical Society can ever be of assistance to you.
Okay.
I look forward to collaborating with future projects, as we have in the past, in various ways.
Yeah.
And I will see you in the theater.
Okay,
so this is Deborah Schwartz, closing this interview with Lucy Mercer. And on behalf of the Historical Society and the Public Library, thank you very much, and this is the end. Okay.